This is the story of the one. Who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I forgot to show you this. So this is really, really cool. I was in the office this week, and our listener, Alex, she let me borrow it so I can show it to you. Her and her husband went on a trip around the U.S., and when they were down south, they ran into a lot of different, like, thrift sales, estate sales, stuff. She's so lucky. She found this. Can you read that?
Dang
it. I can't. You're going to have to read it. And that way listeners can, you know, if this makes it on.
It's a very old edition of Grimm Fairy Tales. Yes.
No way. Yes. Oh, that's so cool.
Oh my gosh, I just like wish you could see it. Oh, it's one volume. She said that they didn't have volume two, but she's like, she didn't even care. She's like, this is mine. I was like, yeah, you don't find that anymore. Like,
oh, no.
So she's like, you can borrow it. You can show Hallie. I was like, oh, thank you,
Alex. That's so cool.
So shout out to Alex.
That's awesome.
So I told her, I was like, you can borrow one of my old books now. Thanks for letting me read this.
Yeah. That's so neat. And to be able to trust us with their precious things.
I was like, I am very honored. Especially being a bibliophile, and I'm like, I have such a hard time like letting people borrow my shit. Bad experiences in the past, let me tell you. But
yeah. Yeah, so some housekeeping things, a couple little things. We picked up some new members in the private Facebook group. So yay! Shout out to our new friends. Welcome.
We're so happy you're here and hanging out with us. We fucking love you.
And then new Patreon member. Shout out to Nick.
Nick, yes! Hi, Nick.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome. We hope you like the shenanigans over there and the new, especially the new macabre morsels that we've added recently.
Oh, it's fun. There's more come.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for joining us as a freaky friend.
Shout out to all of our looky loos, freaky friends, deadly darlings, and macabre hearties. You fucking rock. We appreciate you over there, and hopefully you're enjoying our after dark shenanigans.
It really helps us to, you know, keep the show going and helps cover some of the basic costs of running the show that, you know, like hosting the show and just the basics of the show.
True. Like everything has a cost nowadays. Yeah. It's, you can't get around it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we do appreciate that very much.
We love you.
It's spooky season officially. This episode's airing in October, and it's a big one. It's the letter L. As you know, you've already read the episode title. So this is one that I've wanted to cover for a while. And I think, you know, I always forget to do this part, but welcome to the show. name is Hallie. And you're listening to Macabre, a dark history podcast. Thank you so much for choosing us for your dark entertainment of the hour. And on today's episode of all of history's horrible people, we are featuring a woman that is so deplorable that I would classify her as one of the top worst of the worst serial killers. And I will call her a serial killer, even though that wasn't a term that they were using at the time in the U.S. And listeners, you do not earn that title easily because, as you know, here on Macabre, we have covered some disgusting human beings. But this one, I assure you, is one of a kind. And we don't take that lightly. So you have to lead this episode with the biggest of trigger warnings, because Macabre is not for the faint of heart, and negative energy is not allowed today. We are going to be talking about the La Loree Mansion and none other than Madame Delphine La Loree, the wealthy socialite and infamous sadist and murderess of New Orleans.
It's going to be a time.
Yeah. So this woman was not only a murderer, she was one of the most vile kinds of murderers. She took great pleasure in torturing the people that were enslaved in her home. And she did it in a way that was so macabre and so vile that this episode, as I mentioned, comes with that big fat trigger warning. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, if you're having your breakfast or perhaps on a little lunchtime break, or maybe you're having dinner, probably time to put that away.
Yeah.
I do not recommend having your charcutes during this episode.
No charcutes today.
No charcutes today. So let's start with her early life. I think it's important to set the stage for Madame Delphine La Loree's early life in order to get a better understanding of what might have shaped her into what she would eventually become. Not that we're trying to give her any excuse for her depravity, but as you know, we always try to understand what the hell might make these people's brains tick, because it just doesn't make sense to us. And we need it to make sense to us. We need to understand, or at least try to. So Madame Delphine La Loree was born Marie Delphine McCarty. She came into the world in 1787 in New Orleans, Louisiana, which was then part of the Spanish colonial empire. Her family was among the prominent Creole elite, a social class of wealthy descendants of the original French and Spanish settlers in the region. The McCartys were influential. They were well connected with deep roots in the local aristocracy, giving Delphine a very privileged upbringing. Her family was significant in New Orleans, not only due to their wealth, but also because of their political and social influence. They were deeply entrenched in the social fabric of the city with connections to other prominent families and involvement in the local governance and economy. New Orleans in the 18th and early 19th centuries was a place of great cultural and social complexity, shaped by its colonial past and mixture of French, Spanish, African, and Creole influences. The McCartys, like many other wealthy Creole families, owned slaves, and young Delphine would have grown up in an environment where the institution of slavery was a normal part of life. Now, some stories say that Madame Delphine's parents were actually killed in a slave uprising. This is a rumor, but if this were true, then that event may have given her a potential motive to seek revenge on the people in her care. So something to think about, because as you know, like, there's always something, well, not always, but potentially something like that could trigger in her mind a reason to want to exact revenge on those people.
Planting the evil seed, so to speak.
Exactly. But it's more likely that her early exposure to the brutal realities of slavery and just witnessing potential treatment, ill treatment, that her family might have subjected to the people in their care would have just made her, you know, numb and just indifferent to that kind of treatment, influencing her later behavior. Now, Madame Delphine was married 3 times, and each marriage actually added to her wealth and social standing. And this is important to some of the discussion that we'll have later. Her first marriage was at the age of 14.
Ooh.
I know. Everybody got married so young. And if you think about it now, it's like, ugh, so gross.
Right.
So gross. But that's just the way it was back then, I guess. As soon as you were fertile, you were getting married off, it seems like. So this took place in 1800. Delphine married Juan Ramon de Lopez y Angulo, a high-ranking Spanish officer who had been appointed as the consul general for Spain in New Orleans. This marriage was an arranged marriage, as was common among the elite, and it further cemented Delphine's place in high society. So at the age of 14, she was married off to an officer. And this is important to note because with her place in high society, you know that this can sometimes allow certain privileges, and questionable things can sometimes get overlooked by the public.
Definitely.
This marriage was short-lived. In 1804, while the couple was en route to Madrid, Don Ramon suddenly died in Havana, Cuba. Delphine, who was pregnant at the time, returned to New Orleans and gave birth to their daughter, Maria Borja Delphine Lopez y Angulo de, this is a very long name, people, I do apologize. Marie Borja Delphine Lopez y Angulo de la Candelaria, nicknamed Borquita. Her second marriage took place just a few years later in 1808. Delphine married her second husband, Jean Blanc, a prominent banker, merchant, and a lawyer who was also involved in the slave trade. That's a very convenient, very convenient man to marry.
Money, honey,
and a lawyer.
Oh, boy. Getting away with a lot of
so you know
stuff.
Yeah. You're very well protected for many reasons. Blanc was a wealthy man, and their marriage further enhanced Delphine's social and financial status. The couple had 4 children together. They lived in a mansion on Royal Street, and it was during this time that the rumors began to circulate about Delphine's harsh treatment of her slaves. Jean Blanc died in 1816, leaving Delphine a widow once again, but this time with very substantial wealth. So she was even in a better position now to do some really heinous shit. Now, her third and final marriage was to where she gets her, you know, famous namesake, to Dr. Leonard Louis Nicolas Lalaurie, a French-born physician who was much younger than her. They married in 1825, and it was with Dr. Lalaurie that Delphine purchased the infamous mansion at 1140 Royal Street, where the most notorious chapter of her life would unfold. Despite her outward respectability, Delphine's reputation began to deteriorate during this marriage as stories of her cruelty towards her slaves became more widespread.
Oh, okay.
Ooh. Yeah. And I think there's reasons, which we're going to talk about, why this time in her life, I think things escalated to a point. Now, let's revisit the tone for the social context and influences of the time and bring this kind of full circle. Delphine Lalaurie lived during a time of significant social and political change in New Orleans. The city had transitioned from more Spanish to French control and then to American governance after the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. The social structure was rigid, with a clear division between the wealthy Creole elite and the enslaved African population. Racial and class distinctions were sharply defined, and the Creole elite, including her McCarty family, were known for their opulent lifestyles and strict enforcement of social hierarchies. Slavery, as I mentioned, we know was deeply entrenched in the culture and the economy of New Orleans. It was common for wealthy families like her own and the Lalauries to own a large number of slaves who were constantly subjected to harsh conditions and brutal treatment. Delphine growing up in this environment, as I mentioned, just viewed slavery as a normal and acceptable part of life, which I think made her, you know, just insensitive to how those people were treated. Despite the rumors of her cruelty, Delphine was known in society for her beauty, charm, and refinement. She was a devout Catholic. She regularly attended Mass and participated in charitable activities. Her public persona was one of grace and sophistication, which helped to mask the darker aspects of her character. It's so weird to think about when you know, like, the reality of a person. Like, we know who she is and who she ended up being. And you think about that, too, with, like, Ted Bundy. Who was the other guy? Yep. BTK, who was, like, involved in his church. And John Wayne Gacy, how he was, like, involved in politics. And just the persona they project to the public, right? And it's like, did they project this image to the public as a way to deflect from what they were really doing behind closed doors? Was it like something they did to
hide themselves?
Is it like to fool themselves? Was it something that they did to kind of like,
hey, I can be in a normal setting. Like, I can be more normal. I can play normal, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. Very interesting talk.
Yeah. Is it kind of like that? Is it like the devil and the angel? Is it like retribution in a way? Like, I'm doing these good things because I'm doing these bad things and it makes me okay. Like that kind of thing.
That'd be a good, like, that would be a good Cobb Morsel talk.
It would be.
Debate time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But of course, this striking contrast between her public image and the private behavior was something that would certainly shock the people of New Orleans when they found out about what was really happening behind closed doors when those things came out to the public later. Okay. Now, listeners, this is where we take a dark turn. And I'm just going to give you another trigger warning because this is where things are going to get really macabre, because this part of the episode is where we're actually going to get into depictions of human suffering, including torture. If that's something that is a trigger for you, you are probably going to want to just stop the episode and go back to something else that's more lighthearted. You know, like Q is for quackery or the I for idioms.
You
read my
mind.
Like,
I was like, may I suggest I is for idioms, part one and two?
Yeah. Part one and two. You've been warned. So I'll just say that. Now let's get into the history of the mansion itself. The Lawlery Mansion was built in the early 1830s. It is a grand three-story structure designed in the French colonial style, which was common in New Orleans at the time. The house was originally constructed for Delphine Lawlery and her third husband, Dr. Leonard Louis Nicolas Lawlery. The couple purchased the property in 1831, and it quickly became one of the most impressive residences in the city. Mm-hmm. The mansion featured spacious rooms, high ceilings, and intricate ironwork balconies that overlook Royal Street. Inside, the Lawleries displayed their wealth and status through lavish furnishings, crystal chandeliers, and expensive artwork. The mansion itself was a reflection of Delphine Lawlery's position in society, a symbol of her wealth, power, and influence. It was also a site of many social gatherings where the city's elite would gather to enjoy fine dining, music, and conversation. Now I'm going to hit you with a little modern day macabre morsel. Some of you listeners might know this and some of you might not. Nicolas Cage actually owned the property for a time. And the mansion is currently up for sale. Yeah. So you can actually look at the real estate images online And it is fucking beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I think the price tag was around $10.25 million. Oh. So, you know, if you have some cash floating around, you can be the proud owner of a blood-soaked mansion with a gruesome past that is no doubt haunted and filled with all kinds of negative energy. But it is beautiful. It's stunning. It's,
I wonder why they don't want to make it a gorgeous estate. Museum.
I mean, for that price tag. it needs to be somebody that has that kind of cash to float around, like Nick Cage.
Why'd he sell it? He have an experience?
He didn't sell it. my understanding is it got taken from him because he owed some taxes that he did not want to pay the IRS. So, yeah, but you can Google that and probably find out if that's true or not. Oh. But yeah. Yeah, so this, where it's located, is really close to the famous cemetery. It's not too far away from the famous St. Louis Cemetery, where he also has a pyramid mausoleum that's like 8-10 foot tall. Yeah,
I did hear about that. I've seen pictures of that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's an interesting dude. So I'm not surprised that he owned that mansion, but yeah. He didn't get rid of it by choice.
Interesting. Okay.
I digress. So let's go back to the woman who is solely responsible for giving the LaLaurie Mansion its ghosts. In public, Madame Delphine LaLaurie was known as a gracious hostess and a respected member of New Orleans society. She was admired for her beauty, charm, and elegance. The LaLaurie's home was a social hub, where the most influential figures of the city would gather for elaborate parties. To outsiders, Delphine seemed like the epitome of refinement and civility, embodying the ideals of the Creole aristocracy. But something more sinister lurked in the shadows. Rumors began to circulate about Delphine's treatment of her slaves. Neighbors whispered about the strange sounds that emanated from the mansion at odd hours. This included screams, moans, and the constant clinking of chains.
Oh.
There were also stories of slaves who disappeared without explanation, never to be seen again. These rumors, however, were often dismissed or ignored, as the LaLaurie's social standing protected them from serious scrutiny. Because when you have that kind of money and influence, you know, no one really believes you are torturing and killing people for fun, right?
Paying people
couldn't possibly happen.
Exactly.
People with money and power would never do such a thing.
Wrong. Sorry.
Yeah. That never happens.
Never.
Now, some of the rumors, which have not been substantiated, were that the LaLauries, including Dr. LaLaurie, who allegedly had a curiosity for medical abnormalities, was practicing using zombie drugs on the slaves to make them more docile, and was doing some experimentation of his own. And when things didn't go according to plan, the LaLauries were dumping the bodies in the swamp. But who would know? The only counter to this rumor is that the methodology for this practice was that this type of chemical-style lobotomy, along with the other experiments, was very costly even for that time, which would have been about $25,000 per victim, which would have even been very steep for them at that time.
Okay.
So just a rumor, but I don't know. Where did that rumor come from? Maybe they did it once. I don't know. Maybe they just...
Right.
Who knows? But also, he could have been concocting his own type of zombie drug. I don't know.
Ooh.
Another creepy rumor that may have some truth to it was that the famous New Orleans voodoo queen, not to be confused with Delphine LaLaurie, Marie Laveau, had come across an insane, deformed demon child and gave the child to Delphine LaLaurie for reasons unknown.
Mm.
The story goes that the child was kept in total darkness for 5 years, fed only raw meat until it eventually died. Now, this story may not have been a rumor at all. It is possible that the child was given to Dr. LaLaurie by Marie Laveau because the child was given up by its parents. They would not have been able to treat the child at the time. The descriptions of the child indicate that the child may have suffered from a condition called Harlequin syndrome, which is a syndrome that causes babies to be born with hard, thick plates of skin that crack and split apart, and the skin never fully heals. But a child with this condition would have not been able to survive for 5 years during the 1830s. Infection would have likely caused an early death. But in any event, it is a creepy story.
Ooh, really creepy.
One event that is absolutely true and was witnessed by a neighbor that has since perpetuated the LaLaurie Mansion's one of their most enduring ghostly tales took place when a neighbor heard a blood-curdling scream come from the nearby LaLaurie Mansion, and she looked towards the mansion and saw Madame Delphine chasing a young enslaved girl with a whip in hand into the mansion, and eventually they ended up on the rooftop. The neighbor did not see what happened next, but she heard the body of the young girl hit the ground in the courtyard below. Eventually, she saw the young girl's body being taken away and watched her being buried in a shallow grave. Ooh. This young girl is known today as Leah, and it is said that her spirit haunts the property as far as the sidewalks outside the mansion. Passerbys have even reported feeling someone tugging at their clothes at the mention of her name, only to turn around and find no one there.
Oh man, that's so horrifying.
Yeah. It's like, what could a young child do that was so bad? That you're like, you chase her into the house, up to the rooftop, and then whatever happened up there, that you most likely pushed her off the roof. Or things were so bad that the child was like, I don't want to do this anymore, and jumped off the roof.
Right. Yeah. And how old was she? Or doesn't it say?
It just said young girl. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine probably like, you know, 8-10 years old, maybe somewhere in that range.
Oh, wow.
So it's no secret that Madame Delphine LaLaurie liked to torture her slaves, and starvation and being chained up were like the standard in the LaLaurie Mansion. And that was just like the baseline, right? If that was the least of your worries, you were doing pretty good in that household compared to the other atrocities and some of the other things people were being subjected to. The true extent of the horrors that took place inside the LaLaurie Mansion wasn't fully revealed to the public until April 10th, 1834, when a fire broke out in the mansion's kitchen. The fire started by an elderly enslaved cook who was chained to the stove. And this person was, this was just basically a desperate act of rebellion. She later confessed that she had set the fire in an attempt to end her suffering and to bring attention to the cruelty inflicted by her mistress. So let me kind of reiterate this. So this woman, she was chained to the stove. And what I mean is like constantly chained to the stove.
Yeah. Which
like
no
didn't leave the stove.
One, that's already the fucking problem right there. And then to continue, if she was willing to go that far to get out of it, brings us back to the same story about Leah. Like, what the fuck was going on in there?
Oh, she knew. She had to know all the other things that were happening, right? And then you think about the household. Okay, so we're going to get into some other really dark, deep shit. We're going to go down the rabbit hole with this in a minute. So it's like this person is finally the person that's like, I am chained up and I'm going to set this fire. I don't care if I fucking die. Chained to the stove. Like, I'm going to end this. This is how bad this is. But like people talk, right? So if there's any conversation that's happening amongst these people in this household, like you hear you know, and it's probably really scary to have those conversations with the people in right. the household, but like at some point you hear what's going on, like in the upper levels of the house. Cause you know, we're going to talk about where the torture chamber mm-hmm. was and stuff, but people talk, like at some point you risk your own life to get the word out to the other people and right. stuff like that. But
you earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Okay. As the fire spread, neighbors and passerbys rushed to help. When they arrived, they found Delphine LaLaurie frantically trying to save her valuables, but she refused to give them the keys to the slave quarters. This, of course, raised suspicion, and rescuers took matters into their own hands, breaking down the doors to the attic. What they found inside was absolutely horrifying. If you've watched American Horror Story Season mm-hmm. 3, The Coven, they did a pretty damn good job of portraying Madame Delphine LaLaurie's yeah. cruelty. I personally had a really difficult time watching that season, to be honest. It was like a lot for me. I don't do well with torture. I mean, I don't think anybody does well with torture, but as far as like horror movies and stuff like that, that's the one thing that I just have the most mm-hmm. difficulty with. And just in my mind, knowing that they were portraying a real life monster and that some of the stuff they were showing actually happened in real life, yeah. it was just too much for me. I just, mm-hmm. I can't with that.
Nope.
So the attic of the LaLaurie mansion was an actual torture chamber where enslaved men, women and children were subjected to unimaginable cruelty. According to contemporary reports, the slaves were found in a state of severe malnutrition, with their bodies covered in scars, welts, and festering wounds. Now, this is, I'm giving you the contemporary, modern, watered down, kind of the safe version of mm-hmm. the story now. Many were shackled to the walls, their limbs twisted and broken, some so badly that they could no longer walk or stand. Mm. Others were confined in small cages, contorted into unnatural positions. And this version is more true than some of the sensationalized reports that were in the newspapers at the time. But as you know, newspapers have to sell newspapers. So they had to mm-hmm. amp it up a little bit. Now, one of the sensationalist newspapers reported the version of the story that said the following. 7 enslaved people were found chained up in a torture chamber. The men were found naked, chained up, their lips sewn shut, their fingernails pulled out, and their eyes gouged. Their tongues were sewn to their chins, their hands were sewn to their bellies, and their joints had been pulled from their sockets. The women, on the other hand, had been bound in chains with their mouths and ears crammed full of ash and chicken intestines, and some of them had been covered in honey so that it would attract stinging black ants. Their intestines were pulled from their abdomens and knotted around their waists like belts, and holes had been drilled into their skulls so they could be lobotomized with a stick to scramble their brains. Now, one of the reports that was backed up by investigators does say that some of the most grotesque discoveries were the results of sadistic medical experiments conducted by Delphine LaLaurie herself. She had a penchant for medical curiosities and took it upon herself to use her slaves to create her own human oddities. Reports described how she had mutilated her victims, performing crude surgeries without anesthesia, She had their bones broken and reset at bizarre angles, rendering them crippled and deformed. One woman had been transformed into a human crab by having her bones broken and reset to mimic the limbs of a crustacean, so she would have to crawl around in agony with her bones reset at strange angles. Another victim, a man, had his intestines removed and wrapped around his body like a belt. These acts of unspeakable cruelty shocked even the most seasoned investigators.
Oh my gosh.
To make matters worse, the slaves who survived were taken to a local jail where they were put on display so that the public could see the extent of their suffering.
What?
This display served as a gruesome confirmation of the rumors that had long circulated about Delphine LaLaurie's cruelty. That in itself is another horribly inhuman thing to have happened to those poor people.
Yeah. At what fucking point are you like, maybe we should try to help them in some way and not give more torture to them? Because that's a whole other level of fucking torture right there.
Yeah, let's just put these poor people out like a sideshow.
That's like...
for other people to stare at.
Yeah, look at the horrors that she did to these people. Yeah, well, also look at what you're fucking doing and not helping with that. That's like Spanish Inquisition level torture parade level. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, let's take the woman who looks like a human crab and let's put her in jail so that people can come see her suffering.
Like, what the fuck? Like, okay, and that's the other thing. What do you think was going through their head when they were, in quotes, rescued? I would have, Do you think that they had any sort of hope or any sort of relief when they came in to be like, okay, finally, like, we're known now that we're up here and, like, we're gonna get out of here? Or do you think that it was just like another level of holy shit, like what is going to happen now? Like, I can't fucking wrap my head around that shit.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, slavery was not made illegal for, you know, quite some time later. So there really was no rescue in this case. I mean, it's just like, yeah, you got taken out of that particular situation, but your prospects, what's going to happen to you when you're in that physical state? What happens next?
Is there any record of how long they survived after that?
How are you going to live your life as a crab?
Exactly.
What, they probably got shipped off to an asylum or something. I mean, you would be out of your mind. So then just imagine what is next for your life, the rest of your life. I'd be like, just kill me now. Just like go ahead and fucking kill me. I'm done. Like, I don't want to live like this.
No. No way.
There's no way to know exactly how many enslaved people died at the LaLaurie Mansion under the duration of her reign of terror, but the funeral registries documented at least 12 deaths between 1830 and 1834. But we have to remember these are only documented deaths. So we don't really know how many were undocumented.
Which there could have been a ton, especially with the rumors of the swamp. And
As news of the atrocities spread, the people of New Orleans were outraged. A mob descended on the LaLaurie Mansion seeking justice for the enslaved victims. And they did what mobs do. They ransacked the house, destroying much of its interior, tearing down its fixtures. Delphine LaLaurie, however, had already fled the premises. According to some reports, she escaped in a carriage that whisked her away to the docks, where she boarded a ship bound for France. Others say that she might have gone into hiding in the countryside before eventually fleeing the city. The LaLaurie Mansion was left in ruins, a symbol of the horrors that had been perpetrated within its walls. the building remained abandoned for many years, its dark history casting a shadow over the property. Over time, the mansion passed through various owners, each one claiming to experience strange and unsettling occurrences, as you would imagine. Reports of ghostly apparitions, the sounds of phantom rattling chains, disembodied moans, unexplained phenomena, including the phantom appearance of Madame LaLaurie herself. These have all become part of the mansion's legend, cementing its reputation as one of the most haunted houses in New Orleans. And you don't even have to step inside the mansion to experience the kind of dread this place evokes. In fact, now, not many people are even given access to the place. It's been a private residence now for decades. But you don't have to get very close to feel it. I have a personal story, and I think we talked about this on our Patreon episode. And I'm not kidding you. Like, you don't have to get close to feel it. It made me sick to my stomach. And I didn't know what the place looked like, or, you know, I'd never like really Googled it or looked it up before we went. I was just kind of following the tour guide. And we did like the haunted tour of New Orleans. And when we stayed there, we stayed in the French Quarter. So they didn't tell us like where they were taking us specifically until we got there and they like started talking about the place. And, you know, there were a lot of people and a lot of stuff that was going on. And I just like was walking along and all of a sudden, like, I just got this feeling and I was like, oh, I do not feel good. You know, like felt sick to my stomach, got the chills. And then before they even told us where we were, I just knew. Like, I knew exactly which house it was before they told us. I was like,
oh, that's freaky.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's a really gross feeling. It did not feel good. But so, yeah, it certainly gives the vibe if you're sensitive to that stuff. It stands as a reminder of one of the darkest chapters in New Orleans history. It's been renovated and restored multiple times. And, you know, now it's a focal point of the ghost tours and paranormal investigators. Obviously, you know, that place, it's never going to be a happy place. It's never going to be a place where there aren't
residual something
things happening. It has that complex history. It's a symbol of cruelty and the inhumanity of slavery, and a reminder of the horrors that can be inflicted when someone has that much power and it remains unchecked by society.
Agreed.
And on the other hand, it's also a symbol of our fascination with the macabre and the supernatural, a place where history and legend intertwine to create a story that continues to captivate our imaginations. In the end, the LaLaurie Mansion is more than just a building. It's a testament to the darkness that can lurk behind the most beautiful of places. And it's a reminder of how evil can wear a mask of respectability, as we talked about, you know, and we'll definitely have to do a macabre morsel on that at some point.
Agreed.
How people can walk around wearing that mask of and just be completely different behind closed doors. After the mansion caught on fire, it lost the upper floor. And that's actually where the torture chamber was, used to be the attic. So when they rebuilt it, they did not replace that floor. That floor is now the roof.
Gotcha. That was going to be my question to you. I was like, so, well, what did they?
Yeah. So that is the roof. And that is where most of the activity is said to occur. So it's probably a really good thing that they didn't rebuild the upper level, because I have no doubt that nothing good could come from that. And so let's hope they never, let's hope they never add that floor back at any point.
Nothing coming in for like the historical society to be like, we're going to build this how it used to be. No, how about we leave it alone?
Yeah, just let that be. Let's let those stay on the rooftop. But I wonder, you know, like the floor below it, what when you're, you know, like what rooms are in the floor below it, if anybody that like, you could hear, you know what I mean? Like above you, like what you might hear if you're sleeping in those rooms and what sounds like.
No way. Ugh. And there was, so there was never any like trace of Marie after that. Like there wasn't even like report sightings or anything about.
Oh, there probably were. Yeah, there probably were. But she had so much money that she could have, in the 1830s, if she went off to France, she would have easily disappeared into, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So with that much money, you can vanish real quick into a different country.
Agreed. It'd be interesting to try to track her down.
Yeah.
There's got to be something somewhere.
Now you want to go. Now you want to go down that rabbit
hole. Investigate like what happened, and you know, she changed her name. Like,
I also think it would be really interesting to track down the survivors because you know the registry exists of the people that were in her care and the people that survived. Kind of like what their lives would have been like after the fact. It's really sad to think about.
It's very sad. Because unfortunately, they still had a long way to go after that, too, for the enslaving period. It was just...
Would you put her in your top 10?
Of worst people ever?
In the U.S., like, worst serial killers, would you put her in your top 10?
Definitely.
Do you have, like, standouts, like, rattle off five for me? This is hard. I mean, I don't know that I can rank top five, but I can give you five terrible
I can give
ones.
You five, too. But, oh, man, like, I don't think I could put them in order because they're all so disgusting in their own way. Like, John Wayne Gacy, BTK, Ted Bundy. I mean, you could throw Ed Gein in there. That's, like, a whole other category to me, though, Ed Gein. Like... there's certain people that grew up a certain way that you can tell, like, were kind of messed up because of how they grew up, you know? So I'm kind of leaving him out of that because that's like its own category. But going back to the others, Jeffrey Dahmer.
I feel bad for Jeffrey Dahmer, though. So it's like, again, like, it's hard to rank them because I feel like your categorization could be different, right? You could have different categorizations of like the worst of the worst based on did they have the certain influences or they just were just fucking crazy and they had no, that could be a commercial that we could do. We could just rank.
Because Toy Box Killer is in there for me too.
Oh my God.
Unfortunately, that's the other problem is like you could have a top five most grotesque serial killers in different categories, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ramirez. You got to put Ramirez in there. Oh, Green River.
Gary Ridgway, the Zodiac Killer. I mean, can woof. And okay.
We got to do Black Dahlia too. And I'm pretty sure that I feel very confident we know who the Black Dahlia killer was at this point.
There's a lot of arrows being pointed in the same direction at this point. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that's just individuals. That's not even getting into cults and stuff.
We have so much macabre stuff to cover.
Well, speaking of cults and unsavories, we have a theme today.
Yes, because that's on the letter M, which is coming up next. Well, it's not really a cult, but, you know, I mean, kind of a cult mentality. It is kind of a cult. Is it?
Oh, fuck yeah. They were a cult. And we'll get into that. Okay. That might be a discussion topic, too, because, well, we'll talk about that. That's why it's so difficult to have a discussion about that and the categories of people that you're going to list, because unfortunately there's so many fucking categories these people fall into. Yeah.
And listeners, I'm interested to see what you think, because also then we didn't even get into the, we're not even talking worldwide, right? Or we didn't even talk about H.H. Holmes. H.H. Holmes was here, but I didn't even think about him. But like, he's a whole other thing. Then you got Jack the Ripper. But then we didn't go back to Elizabeth Bathory, which we don't even know if like that was legitimate or if like people made her out to be the monster that for she was, or if like.
Right. Oh, yeah. That would be a really good episode to cover too. That could be a huge freaking debate.
Yeah. But Madame Delphine LaLaurie, there is no doubt she was a fucking monster. And I wonder how involved her husband actually was in some of it, because we know that he was a doctor. We know that he had some interest in the human oddities, and maybe he and she kind of did this together. We never really even talked about that idea, that that was a possibility. Maybe he taught her some things.
I wouldn't be surprised, and it would not surprise me if he was involved, because after what you were saying with her different marriages and how things kind of progressed with servants and the workers of the house, it really amped up, it seemed like, once she was able to get married to the physician. And you can't tell me that having, even if you're experimenting, if you don't have certain knowledge of a physical body, you wouldn't be able to pull off the things that she did, you know?
Well, and surely he had his medical textbooks and things, probably at a library. Mm-hmm. And I could see her getting curious and looking at the anatomy books and having conversations with him. And that could go to like a really dark place. Ugh, could you imagine a movie about that? Because, it's never been proposed that he had any involvement in any of it, but I would not put that past a couple with some weird, dark interest.
Definitely not. And
because, how strong was she? We're talking about broken bones.
She was definitely using instruments for that, too. I have a feeling she was able to do a lot of it on her own, but I feel like she definitely had to use tools and
to manipulate and break bones. Who was building that shit? Who was creating those devices? Who was helping with that?
It makes you,
I'm not saying she couldn't do it herself. No,
she totally
could,
but like I really think that she had help and she had assistance of knowledge from her husband. And an even more sickening thought is the fact that, do you think that she made the workers of the house help build that stuff?
Oh, no.
That's a whole other level of nausea right there.
Oh, and they might have had to participate in other ways, too.
And,
Oh, listeners, I did not expect to go down this road.
It's dark. It's really dark. Because, I mean, you kind of hear about that stuff, too. It's not something I really ever really thought about until I started doing research for this episode that we're going to do next. But sometimes people are really good at being the primary evil, but using other people to get there. You know, I wouldn't put it past them for them to be like, maybe that was like another level of them not feeling guilty about things. And it was just like that a distance of themselves. Well, technically I didn't do this physically to this person. I had somebody else do it, but I threatened that person that if they didn't do it, that I would do something to them, or, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And of course we're not saying, this is just us speculating and talking, kind of brainstorming and thinking about what could have potentially happened. Not saying that this is for sure what happened, but it's interesting to think about. People can be pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Well, this is macabre.
Yeah.
Gives us plenty of things to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah. It definitely can. I mean, oh my gosh, like we could have a psychological segment on literally every topic that we have ever covered and will cover, because it's never, I probably have told you this before, but I hate the phrase, it is what it is, because it never is what it is. You're just seeing things from a surface. There's always shit underneath that makes that what it is, you know?
Yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, but is it?
Or is it actually?
That's how it should be. Yeah, that's what it should be. It is what it is, but is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on that note, our next episode, outside of our hometown macabre, because we always do a hometown macabre in between, but the next letter is another heavy hitter.
And that is brought to you by a listener, too. We will get into that. That was shocking. That was shocking to hear. And maybe it will shock you as well. You want me to close this out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't a lot of opportunity for lightheartedness. We'll figure it out another episode. We couldn't do it here. This was serious, serious talk today. But speaking of listeners, you know, showing up with stories of their own, you can absolutely do that too. It's not just for random people. It's for you too. And we want to hear from you. So if you have any stories, paranormal, true crime, personal, creepy, just unnerving, we want to hear it, because macabre is a huge umbrella and so much stuff fits in there. So you can do that in multiple ways.
Multiple ways.
Suddenly I have an accent. Okay, I felt like Mrs. Doubtfire just for a hot second.
Multiple ways.
Oh man, okay.
And we did get some lightheartedness in there after all.
Oh man, sorry about that. I don't know what happened just now. I'm going into some other accent. Oh, you can submit your stories in multiple ways. So why don't we break that down? You can choose whatever makes it easier or funnier for you. Yeah. You can type them to us at thatsomacabre@gmail.com. You can feel free to do that. I know a lot of people don't want to speak it out to us. Because guess what? If you want to speak it out to us, just chat with us. You can. We have a SpeakPipe option on our website, macabrepod.com. You can record up to 5 minutes. If you want to chat longer than that, you are more than welcome. But just let us know that there's a part two, so we can make sure we put those in order and we don't miss any great bits of your story. And on our website, you can buy us a stiff drink over there too if you want to, because after this episode, I think we're going to need one. If you want a little more from us, see other sides of us, I guess you could say, we are on Patreon, where we are really diving in deep over there. Big shout out to all of our Looky Loos, Freaky Friends, Deadly Darlings, and Macabre Hotties. We have been transforming it this season, and it's been a fun time over there. Speaking of fun times, at the minimum, you should join the Facebook group that we have. It is private, but you're welcome to join, because everybody's welcome. We have a growing macabre family over there, and it has been excellent, and I cannot tell you how many laughs I get out of my day from the people posting over there. I promise you, you will not be bored. It's hilarious. Shout out to all of you amazing people over there. And if you like what you're hearing, you are more than welcome to leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. And over here at Macabre, we believe in the buddy system. So tell a buddy, buddy. We'd appreciate it. And it's hard after this episode, but we just want to say we love you. Have fun. Be safe. Be kind. There is just no fucking room for negative energy, okay? It's not allowed. And I guess we'll catch you in the next episode, where we will shock you later.